The views expressed on this show are not necessarily those of Harris Stowe State University or Black Radio Hall of Fame.
Africans at home and throughout the diaspora, unity is strength. We've got the power.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now's the time to do the right thing.
We need more unity.
Come. Stop the fussing and the fighting.
Yeah.
Now's the time to do the right thing.
In the spirit of Umoja, embrace with love.
Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right. Stop the fussing and the
right
fighting.
Right now. Right now.
Now's the time to do the right thing.
That's right. That's right. We are going to do it right because today is Wednesday, and this is your host, Jamal Rogers, with Voices from the Battlefield, and a good time to remind you that we still have a serial liar, a 34-time convicted felon in the White House that is wreaking havoc on this country and the world. We still want to remind you that genocide is going on in Gaza, and it's even worse now because, you know, Netanyahu will not let food come, and we've seen the horrible images of children starving. So this is all done, you all, as I remind you again and again, with our tax dollars. Israel would not be able to do any of this. It would not be for the billions that we send to them annually of our tax dollars. So let's keep an eye on that. I do know that a St. Louis citizen tried to run interference and was part of a flotilla that was trying to get aid there, and apparently they've been stopped. And so
I'm not hearing anything yet. I'll check and see again.
Oh. See what I'm saying?
All right.
Now, why not? But
did the test?
It's acting like it's streaming.
Oh, I think thumbs up.
Okay, y'all, we thought we had a little bit of a technical problem. We always have some surprises here every Wednesday. So what I was saying about our tax dollars over there in Israel that is part of the genocide of Palestinian people, and just seeing the images of children dying and starving and folks fighting with their pots, it really is pretty disgusting when we could actually be doing something about that. I'm talking about this country. So, you know, again, I told you to have your congresspeople on speed dial. So send a call or a text to them saying, you know, enough of this foolishness, enough. We want to get some supplies and food over to Gaza. So that's what's happening there, and that's it's sad. But again, we in this country can stop that. So we have still we're recovering from the.
Lost you again. Lost you again. It's kind of coming in and out. It's weird.
I don't know what's the issue here. Because it's saying it's connected. Okay, we are getting reports that the sound is going in and out. So we don't know what's going on. But we're going to keep going with our broadcast here. And hopefully we'll get another thumbs up that people can hear us. Today in the studio, we have with us, we had a roundabout with this. I'm saying young. She doesn't think she's young, but when I look at the accomplishments that she's had in such a short time, you know, you just have to be totally impressed. So I am fortunate and privileged to have in the studio Taylor Tiamoyo Harris. And she's an investigative reporter who did a phenomenal piece for the New York Times. But before then, she worked for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. It might have been the last of the black reporters there, but we'll talk about that a little bit. But, you know, she came and hit the scene in blazing. She was president of the St. Louis chapter of the National Association of Black Journalists, where she served as director of the Minority Journalism Workshop for high school students. And you all know I'm big about writing with young people and also reading with young people. And she hails from Howard University and is a native of Texas. And so I'm sure they wanting her to come back. But as long as she's here, she's been making her contribution here, and we thank her for that. Welcome to the show, Taylor.
Thank you, and thank you for having me today.
So I want to start off because there are so many, I think, just ideas about how to reform the criminal justice system, which includes, you know, police accountability and also court. And sometimes things sound like they're going to be good, and really, because it's all about black and brown people for real, they tend not to be that good, or they tend not to be that effective. They tend to be just another means for control. And so we just had another death in the jail. I refuse to call it the Justice Center. So the city jail, we had, unfortunately, another young person who, lost their lives. So Samuel Hayes died on July 19th, strapped to a restraint chair. And just let me tell y'all about the restraint chair. That is a appliance from the medieval ages of Europe that have been passed around and down. They've been used in prisons, but they also been used in psychiatric centers. These things are barbaric, cruel, and inhumane. And I know as part of our work as the Organization for Black Struggle, we've always been opposed to the restraint chairs. So this brother was restrained and died. And so, that makes 20 deaths in our jail over the last several years, which is,
Since 2020.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And some of those, really happened rapidly under Clemens Abdullah. So we have from Mike Milton, who is head of Freedom Center, Community Center, and in full disclosure, my co-defendant in the lawsuit against the state around local control. But their organization issued a statement when Samuel Hayes, the news came that he had was, and I'm going to just say the word murder, because we keep having these situations inside of the jail that we know produces these kinds of deaths, and nothing is really being done about it. So Samuel Hayes was placed in a restraint chair about 8:20, according to the reports from city officials, and by 10 p.m. was found unresponsive. Here's what Freedom Community Center is saying needs to happen. The Department of Public Safety, which oversees CJC, their policy requires medical clearance before placing an inmate in a restraint chair, authorization by the shift supervisor, video documentation of entire process by the shift supervisor, medical checks every 30 to 60 minutes, immediate medical assessment after placement, and not to use the chair as punishment. So I can just imagine that a bunch of those policies were violated in the process of the death of Samuel Hayes. And I'm sure we'll get to the bottom of what happened, but it might be a while. So when I'm reading that, because it's those situations and people having to be in a jail temporarily, and again, the Justice Center, the jail, the city jail, is not a prison. These people have not been charged. They are being held there until the arraignment. And their arraignment could mean that there are no charges. So to be in a place that's supposed to be temporary is not a place that you think you should die. while waiting to either get your sentence or be released. And so, you know, for Taylor, who decided, and we're going to hear about why she decided to write about ankle monitors, but when somebody is there and they have not done a crime, a violent crime, advocates have always said the best thing, and the research have affirmed this, that sending them back out into the community is far better and effective than leaving them there to be prey and all the things that happen when you're in these institutions. So when we have a reform that says now people can go home, they just have to wear these ankle bracelets, and people say, okay, that sounds like a better deal because at least they can continue their regular routine. And you have found, Taylor, that that's not exactly the case. So talk about how you came to be concerned or interested in this, and how even the New York Times allowed you to use that as one of your investigative pieces.
Right, it was my investigative piece for over a year. So I would say this, I've been in St. Louis for 6 years. I'm community rooted. I was asking people in the community, I cover criminal justice, I'm saying, hey, to attorneys, to advocates, to community leaders, to residents, hey, what's bothering you? What's going on in the community? And people pointed out a number of things. So I pitched those to the New York Times. PREA violations in the St. Louis County Jail, but also around St. Louis. But ankle monitors, I got on that because one person brought it up to me, and then I started asking around. I said, okay, hey, someone mentioned ankle monitors. What's it to you? So the court said, hey, yeah, we've had some issues with some prior vendors. It's a case-by-case basis. This is something that's new. I asked public defenders. I asked other attorneys, hey, yeah, my clients are suffering on this. They're having an issue. They're not faring well on house arrest. It's unfair. There's some constitutional issues. And then I started asking around outside of St. Louis, and then I found, okay, this is not just a St. Louis issue. So that's what landed me on this story.
So I love young people with inquiring minds and curiosity, because you have to have a natural curiosity to be in journalism and to also not just go for the regular angles that normally would get, but to dig deeper and then to find out what is really going on. So you wrote the article. It took you over a year. You interviewed a number of folks. And just let me say to the folks who allowed you to use them in a public way, hats off to them, because I know that's not an easy decision for people to know, oh, look at Johnny, he's got an ankle bracelet. So for them to want to be a part of the story to talk about what's fair, what's not, what needs to be improved, my hat's off to both of those
folks. It was such a risk for them. I mean, a lot of them talked about the harm. A lot of them said, hey, like, it's so bad. I mean, normally I don't want to talk about my charges because, hey, a lot of them, their charges had already been dropped, or they had already, they were on probation, they weren't facing jail time, but they were saying, this was so bad, I don't care. I want the world to know about this. I want other people to know. So I was surprised as well how many people were just forthcoming and direct. And, of course, that was something that I had to focus on as a reporter, protecting my sources. And I'm letting them know because a number of them, I was following them with their case. My main lead, a black woman, Kyla, mm-hmm. I was with her from the time I met her in court until she got her probation. So that's 6-7 months of me following her in court. I visited her while she got also reincarcerated for ankle monitor violation. So, yes, people were very open again because of that harm.
And let me speak just a minute about her, because this article you can find on the web, and many sources, other sources other than the New York Times, picked it up. So you can find all you need to do is put ankle monitors by Taylor Harris, and you know several sources have come up.
But the Missouri Independent was one of our co-publishers, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, my former employer. KSDK reposted as well, and I went on there. St. Louis Public Radio, it's also on that site. Let's see.
St. Louis Magazine.
St. Louis Magazine as well. And also Texas Metro News in Dallas.
Oh,
also a black publication.
Okay,
so, yes.
Yeah.
Owned by a black woman, Cheryl Smith. So.
Good for her. So, you know, when I saw, for example, you followed her, and obviously there was a New York Times photographer that was helping to illuminate the pictures by adding the visuals. And there was a picture of that sister adjusting her ankle bracelet or something.
In her bed, yeah.
In her bed. Mm-hmm. And I see the little shoes under, you know, underneath the
bed.
And
you see her big belly. She's pregnant.
And I'm thinking, what a photograph to highlight this, you know, this woman's issue. And in this picture, you can't see her belly. You just see the ankle, her leg hanging over the bed, and you see the little shoes. Yeah, that's a powerful image there. There's another picture of her that I think you're talking about where she's actually, you could, not a full body, but her sitting on the bed.
Right above that. Yeah, such a little foot. Yeah,
and
she is a little woman. I think Kyla, I would say, is about 5 foot tall. She's really short. She was very quiet, and at times I was like, I kept asking her, hey, are you comfortable? You sure? And I kept reminding her who I am and who I was working for at the time, knowing that this is coming out. And she said, yep. She was quiet, but again, she was forthcoming because she wanted to talk about, again, all the harms that she experienced with jobs, with housing, with everything in her life, again, because of this ankle monitor, and before she was found innocent or guilty.
Yeah, so again, you know how I'm in about kids, y'all. So as soon as I saw those little shoes under there, I know that, you know, kids are in that house, that she's a mother, that the kids have to see her with that ankle bracelet on, and all of what that means. So talk a little bit about her situation, and especially knowing that she was acquitted or never charged, and what it means to have to wear this kind of a device. And then we're going to go into, like, what it means for the city to have a contract on these things, because it did remind me when I was sitting in the police board meeting and they approved the cameras, you know, body cams, and I'm thinking, okay, here's some more contractors who are using our tax dollars, and we don't really know what the hell is going on when they come and they say they're going to do stuff. So talk about her situation and how she even, who gets to wear the monitors and who gets to just stay? What is, did you find out there was any differences?
Right, and the patterns for, so ultimately it's the judges, right? So the judges are deciding, or they're the ones who's approving these monitors. I want to put this into context. So when we say ankle monitors in pretrial, we're talking about you get arrested, and before you used to go down and either pay to get them out, pay a bail, pay a bond, or pay the bondsman, right? And now what we have is ankle monitors, which has replaced that. And so,
completely?
For the most part, I would say in St. Louis City. So that's why I also focus this on St. Louis City versus St. Louis County. They are also coupling ankle monitors along with cash bail. And also, I will say this, in the city, they have covered the costs, right? The county is also having people pay for these monitors, which are about $10 a day, about $300 a month. So it did not get to make it into the article, but I did have people out in the county who were hurting financially, you know, having to pay $300 to $400 for a monitor per month. They have not been found innocent or guilty. Some of them have had to move back in with their parents. They're still having to pay an attorney, and again, having to post bond. It's hurt a lot of people.
So Taylor, just to stop you there, so those people, should they be found innocent, do they get reimbursed?
No.
Oh,
they do
goodness.
Not. They do not. I think the most, I scanned the contract, the most I saw for reimbursement was for some in financial need. It said, I think it was like a $100 gift card to a grocery store. And I think I asked, but no one had data on who had received it or not, because I surely asked.
Right.
Did they get the $100?
Yeah.
But I actually didn't meet anybody that did.
And plus, that's a pittance compared to what you are forking out every month for ankle bracelets.
Wow. And that's why St. Louis City did step up and cover the cost. But, you know, I decided to focus this investigation on the other costs, because ProPublica actually did in a great investigation actually in 2019 or 2021, I think, on the cost of ankle monitors and how that was harming people. But it was deeper than that. You know, again, people losing houses, jobs, just the surveillance of having this on your ankle. That affected a lot of people. So, yeah, you wanted to talk about Kyla.
Kyla Mason,
yes.
Who has had to endure this and then to be, again, to be acquitted.
Well, she had an SIS, but I'll start at the beginning. So I opened up with Kyla. I opened up my article with a black woman who had been subject to this ankle monitor. I guess Kyla wore this monitor for months, I guess. Roughly, I would say about six months on and off. I mean, she had it off while she was incarcerated. But I met Kyla at the courthouse like I met everyone else. there was a misunderstanding apparently in court about her ankle monitor, whether she had house arrest or not. So they have this ankle monitor on, but what controls them is the house arrest. So you get arrested, right? You get out on your bond, you have this monitor, and the requirements, okay, what's your work schedule? Okay, what's your work address? Okay, the monitor will be here at this time at this address. You get like maybe 5 minutes. And you know,
to get where you're going.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So again, there was a misunderstanding about whether she had house arrest or not. I was just listening in court. And so okay, I was like, okay, I think I want to go and talk to her. So I sat down next to her when she got outside of court, and I was like, look, I'm talking to people. I want to understand more about your monitor. I heard there's some harms. I want to hear from people personally. And she was like, yeah. And then I didn't know at the time because, of course, her belly wasn't that big. That's how long I followed her. Literally from the time I didn't know to I'm asking how was the baby.
Almost there.
I'm hearing the baby crying on the phone. Right. Like, oh, my gosh. So she's like, yeah, I've had this monitor on, and I'm pregnant, and I'm sick of this. I'm like, okay, slow down. Tell me. So she started, again, telling me about her life. And so, again, I explained to her. She was at first kind of skeptical. But, again, she said, you know what, this is so bad. I don't even care anymore. I don't think my lawyer gets it. I don't think the courts get it. I don't think the other judges get it. So, fine, I'm going to talk to you. And so, you know, after a while, again, I'm always protective of my sources. I stopped hearing from her. And I was like, okay, I know she didn't. Maybe she ghosted me. I don't know. You know, but I look on the court docket, and I see reincarcerated. And so I'm like, oh, my gosh. I'm like, what is she? And I'm looking on her docket, and I'm seeing violations. I'm like, what is she getting violations for? She had told me before. She said, hey, I'm a mother. She's like, I'm going to the store. If my baby runs out of diapers, I'm not just going to stay at the house just because this ankle monitor is on. Like, I'm going to go. She's like, she said she would call and leave voicemails. That was the procedure. But she's like, hey, at times you couldn't leave a voicemail, or at times I'm just going to go to the store. You know, again, she's like, I have not been found guilty. She said she thought she was going to get off on the charge. She's like, I'm going to the store. So I'm thinking like, oh, my gosh, did she go to jail for some of these violations? So I'm calling. So I'm trying to find out if she's at the jail. I see she was. So I got in contact with her mom because I looked on the form and I saw she had a sponsor recognizance. Now, that is when judges normally, someone that is, I would say, under the age of 25, if they get arrested, usually for a lower felony, a C or a D felony, they will assign the parent to be a sponsored recognizance. And they're responsible for this person. So I call her mom. Again, her mom was like, oh, she's been talking to a reporter? I didn't know, but let me tell you, this is what's been going on. And she's like, yeah, she got sent back to jail because of the violations. She had been leaving the house. Also, in her case, there was an argument that she had had with someone, and she was like, the victim kept lying. She was telling me about the case. She was like, but she's never been toward the house. Kyla had gotten into an argument with someone that was down the street from her mother's house, and she said in self-defense she had pulled out a gun, and it was caught on video. I watched the video, and she said, you know, stay away from me. But the person had called police, and again, she got charged with unlawful use. She did not fire. No one was physically hurt in that situation. But again, that's what she was arrested for. That's what she was on the monitor for. So her mom's like, yeah, she's been getting violations for leaving the house or maybe coming home late from work. She also door dashes. And sometimes, you know, the monitor goes out or it's not charged. I'm like, what? And so I found out. I'm like, okay, she's at the jail. So I actually did, was able to go to the jail and talk to Kyla. And because I didn't know where this story was going to end. I didn't know when the New York Times was going to say push publish. Mm-hmm. So I'm talking to her again. She's open. I'm like, hey, I've been in contact with your mom. She's like, yeah, I know. And she's telling me, she's like, this is crazy. She's like, I missed a doctor's appointment for my baby. She's like, because of this. And she's like, I'm going to jail because I went to Dollar Tree to get diapers. And that's what she said. She said CJC. Mm-hmm. So she was locked up for about a month. And then she got out. Before, she wasn't allowed to go to her mom's house because that was in the zone of the ankle monitor,
yeah,
where the argument happened, right? And so now she's been evicted, right? Because she went to jail for a month. She didn't have the money for her rent. She couldn't work. So she's been evicted because of this monitor, because she's in jail, right? Also had her car repossessed.
Oh, no.
You know?
So that went DoorDash.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. No more DoorDash and trying to make money.
Mm-hmm.
She previously had a job. Now, I will say this. The job where she had, you know, denied that they let her go because of the monitor. But she did tell me, she said, hey, after I got out of jail the first time, after I got arrested, I went to work. She said I had enough sick time, so it wasn't a problem. But she was like, you know, I wore long pants to try to cover it up. But she was like, people were staring, you know, at my ankle. And she was like, you know, after about, I think it was about a week or about 2 weeks, she received that dismissal notice. So again, don't always have that direct correlation. Mm-hmm. People are telling us, hey, you know, I'm a contractor. People see that on my leg. They don't want to hire me.
Right.
You know,
right.
Another woman told me, hey, I clean houses. And people see that.
Definitely.
And she's like,
yeah, that would definitely raise a concern.
A lot of people said that they even waited and held off on employment because of the ankle monitor. But again, you are expected to be a productive member of society with this on and be able. That's the point of you wearing it, is so that you can get out of jail and can take care of your responsibilities, can take care of your kids.
Right.
But we found that people were not able to do that.
Wow. And I'm thinking about the number of, you know, what it sounds like. It sounds like there's very little difference between this and cash bail. And so then the question becomes, what are the benefits if you are going to be tracked in violation? Then how are you able to go resume a daily routine? I don't see how you could do that if you get 5 minutes to get to point A and point B.
Well, they give you a amount of time, but hey, let's say maybe there's traffic, or hey, let's say a lot of people, you know, hey, they may work at Amazon or a warehouse or something. Their boss is like, hey, you're doing overtime today. They don't necessarily get an option. I've talked to a number of employees, county employees, who say they've not gotten an option for overtime. It's been required, but you don't get that with a monitor. If they know that your job, if you get off at 3, and they know what your address is, they'll say, okay, according to Google Maps, you know, it takes 15 minutes to get home. So if you're not there by 3:15, by 3:20, you're getting a violation. And again, this violation, they don't know if it's just hanging over their head, if it's going to get them sent back to jail, because maybe one violation gets you sent back. Maybe it's 20. Maybe it blows up like the Daniel Riley situation with Kim Gardner.
And so just to remind people about that situation, that was the young lady that was in town for a soccer game, and there was a young
volleyball.
Mm-hmm. And the defendant, who now has been convicted, basically was racing through downtown and hit her, and she lost both legs. So there was a lot of sympathy for this young woman, because basically her career as a volleyball player was over. But because people were trying to muddy up Kim Gardner as the prosecutor, people then began to think that that was the role of a prosecutor to release people. And it's not.
It was one of the many things.
It's
that
the judges.
Use.
And so because we don't know how these entities and institutions work, then we bought into the lie. And that was a pile on them for Kim Gardner. But
that was one of the many things that was used to take her down, ultimately. That incident specifically with Janae Evans.
I think that was
the monitor. That was one of the reasons we talked about why I got this started. That also got my interest, right? I'd heard about all these incidents where people were out on monitors and things that happened. So I had the victims or survivors in mind as well. But with that incident, what I found was it's not just prosecutors, like you said. It's also judges, also their attorney if they see violations. It wasn't just one entity's or person's fault. It seems like that was a systemic error.
Mm-hmm.
From what I found with what happens with monitors, because when you get a violation, it's put on the docket and it's submitted to the court, which is also submitted to the judge, which is also able for the attorney and also the prosecutors to see.
So this was a young man that had multiple violations, but, you know, there was not much done until, you know, the ultimate happened. But I'm thinking that a number of people believe that the ankle monitor is not location specific. You're wearing it so that whoever is monitoring it, and we know that is a contractor that's monitoring, knows where you are, but not that you can only be certain places. So, you know, talk a
it
little
depends.
Bit about that, because I think there's this notion that you could still go anywhere as long as you're not wherever. And if you are somewhere that's where you're not supposed to be, that's going to show up. And so they'll know, oh, yeah, you know, Taylor was over there at the liquor store when somebody was
uh-huh.
robbing it.
uh-huh. No, so some of them, it depends on what the rules are for your specific monitor and what your house arrest rules are, right? So maybe you may not have house arrest. Look, I did talk to one person who said they didn't have a problem with the monitor, right? This was a person that was not on house arrest. They just had a monitor. They were ordered to stay away from It was a domestic violence situation. Stay away from the victim or survivor's home. But he was like, yeah, I didn't have any rules. So, yes, it was not an issue for me necessarily. Didn't really bother my ankle too much. But other people, it did. I guess maybe it depends on your ankle, your size, or whatever factors. Again, pregnancy, all different factors that contribute. But ultimately, most people who are put on monitors are put on house arrest. And the rules differ for each person. Maybe a judge says that you must be home by this specific time. Or maybe you have a specific schedule that you have to submit to the court. Everybody's rules is different. And a lot of people, again, assume, and then they rack up violations, end up getting called back to court. Because I will say, after that situation with Daniel Riley, with Kim Gardner's judges, we saw a lot of no bail. We didn't see a lot of people getting out on ankle monitors. This, again, is relatively new, about 5 years since bond reform in 2019. So after that specific incident, anytime someone typically is out on bond, whether monitor or not, there's an incident that happens or someone gets hurt or even worse, killed, we see judges start to no bail, and now everyone's all in jail. So we saw that shift after the incident.
And I think we also saw the population of CJC go up, and so some of us who have been working with administrations to say lower that, because that's the point that leads to overcrowding, that's the part that leads to violations of people's constitutional rights, because why am I in here? And there's no speedy trial, because some of those people have been in there as long as 5 years. So, you know, I'm so glad you did the article, Taylor, because it demystified the whole issue around ankle monitors that people once saw as a positive reform. So talk about what people actually experienced, because some of it was physical injuries from wearing that bracelet. And then, you know, you talked about the hardships with employment, with, you know, moving around. But what were some of the other pitfalls with that?
I would say this, physical injuries. I know James, I took a picture of his. His was when I saw him the day he got it off. I was with him. I took a recording. And he was like, look, I told you, it's been bothering my ankle. And it was like a small little boil on the ankle. So we did have people that say, like, hey, Kyla was like, yeah, it definitely bothers me. I'm pregnant. My ankles are swollen. And some people actually did have to get doctor's notes who had medical issues. I talked to a woman who was older and said, yeah, like, she's like, my diabetes, she's like,
I was thinking about diabetics. Yeah.
They've had everyone on these monitors. I've talked to all different age groups, anyone that's out on bond. And I would say this, when it comes to constitutional rights and freedom, a lot of judges would say, you know, what, it's better than jail, right? Or what other choice do I have? But you do have some other choices that they utilize, which are the recognizance. So we have the sponsor recognizance or personal recognizance. That's where, you know, hey, there's just a promissory note that you're going to come back. You also have the phone calls where you're required to phone in. And I would say this to, you know, skeptics. Data had showed, now they only had 1 year's worth of data, I will say, and that was for, I believe, 2024, but it was 1 year. And I compared the data and I said, well, the rates for court appearance and failure to appear in court and completing bond and no new arrests, they were almost identical with or without the monitor. So, I mean, you look at the data. So, I mean, you know, those options, those are options that the court has and it can utilize them. Again, it depends on the judge.
Yeah, because if I come in and I've had a misdemeanor and I'm in there, why wouldn't I be allowed out on my own recognizance, or if I'm young enough to? I'm just thinking about this whole lens that people use. And I remember people were very enthusiastic about another program that the courts were going to use to help judges assess who was a risk factor.
Risk assessments.
Yeah, and so what they found out was that, you know, those algorithms were racist in nature, so it really wasn't helping poor black folks.
I actually touched on that in my other investigation. Last year I had an investigation with Pew Charitable Trust and the National Association of Black Journalists on juvenile justice, and I looked into the details of those risk assessments, and because I heard a lot of people say, hey, I don't like them, I hate them. I was like, what's the controversy? And yes, it's the nature of some of those questions. I would say this, for Missouri, some of the questions that are asked in whether to detain a youth or not and keep them in that so-called detention center or juvenile jail, they ask about Your school attendance is a factor. Were your parents alcoholics? They ask that, you know, is that a factor? Do you have sometimes behavior problems? These are all sort of questions that are asked. And so some of the questions, I even ask experts in risk assessments, like, hey, is this standard to determine? And some of them, they were like, yes, some of those are no. But, I mean, that's just something that we should definitely take a better look at is, you know, what are the questions that we're asking to determine, okay, is this person a threat or not? Judges were not, I would say, not as forthcoming with that information in that investigation. I think I got Judge Mullen to speak off the record, but he was recently retired. But none of the judges on the record wanted to discuss, you know, hey, what are, you know, how do you use your discretion? Who are you letting out? What are you considering when you decide whether someone needs a monitor or whether they, you know, a personal recognizance or whether you keep them in jail or not? What are you thinking about? I will say, you know, when they don't talk, we look at patterns and data. They're not normally getting out for A and B felonies.
Right.
Those are typically getting denied bond.
Mm-hmm.
But the lower felonies are typically what they're letting people out on. I would say we've seen a shift. I would say a downward shift since December. But we've also seen the jail numbers go up. So.
Yeah, because when you talked about the backlash when we had the young volleyball player and then judges, you know, I can't do that, you know, and everybody started doubling down, and then it affected the people that were coming through the system who thought that they were going to have some amount of mobility, and now that's even shut down.
Yeah, I mean, well, look, if you mess up at work, you know, we might get reprimanded, but if they mess up, then, you know, someone could get hurt or even worse, so that's what they're thinking about, and sometimes I do think that they're acting out of fear.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I mean, the same thing with the parole board. I mean, they're scared that the folks going to come out and do something else. But, you know, I think with the assessment that we talked about, it does have this lens that the people who are making decisions about who gets what, it's still that racial lens, it's still that class lens. And so then you end up really the same people still are incarcerated or still being detained or still, I mean, so it was
overwhelmingly, I mean, on monitors, even just overwhelmingly black, male, and poor working class men. I mean, that's what the data showed us. And I would say this, you want to talk about patterns. One thing that I noticed and I wanted to give in my story, I mean, you noticed the two black men that I had with monitors, they were charged and had charges related to fleeing from police.
Mm,
you know, that
yeah.
was controversial. A lot of people asked me about that, but, you know, we didn't hide anybody's charges, you know. With this, we wanted to give space to that because I noticed in my data, you know, I went up to people, I found people through attorneys, maybe through some advocates, I found others just through walking up to them, and I asked them, you know, and I'm like, hey, I'm starting to notice I have a bunch of men charged with fleeing that are out on monitors, and contrary to what a lot of people think, you normally always do not get jail time for that. A lot of people, they were out on like a SIS probation. Or even found not guilty. Mm-hmm. David was found not guilty. But I wanted to give space to them to talk about that. You know, a lot of people would shun that and say, you know, you normally don't hear from people who led the police chase and give room for them to speak. But
because won't that, color the investigation that you're trying to do? Because then people see them as like already fleeing. So what are they fleeing from?
Yeah, and you want to give them, I wanted to give them space to talk about that. Again, we're talking about people, they're not locked up. You know, it's not like, okay, you can shun them. I'm like, well, you're going to pass them in a grocery store. You may pass them when you're walking downtown. You can't just ignore a whole group of people. And they're out, and I want to give them space. And when I did, they let me know, hey, you know, why were you running? Okay, well, I had a gun. Okay, well, why did you have a gun? Well, look, I know that I'm not supposed to legally, but hey, they told me I live in St. Louis. Stuff doesn't just stop happening. I live in this neighborhood. I have to protect myself. I have to protect my family. Again, it's not necessarily for anybody, for me or you or anybody, to agree with it. But again, to give them space, a platform, a voice, we have to, right? We have to give
Absolutely.
Them a voice.
I mean, one of the things that to add to that, I always tell people is when you in St. Louis in particular, and I know this because I've been dealing with the police department here for decades, is that you're going to come across a police that says, if I see you again, I'm going to beat the crap out of you, or you're going to be a dead nigga. And so interfacing with these folks over time, you take them seriously. And then when you see them again and you maybe you got some contraband or whatever, yes, you're going to run. Or what we're starting to see more of is, I'm armed and you armed. Let's just see how this is going to work out because, you know.
I have heard, just with, as you just described, I have heard some horror stories from people about specific encounters with the police. Again, we know the statistics about St. Louis being, you know, the, one of the deadliest police departments. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think that data, though, I think is like since 2017. I'm not sure what it is up to date, but they still remain one of the highest, at least police killings per capita. And so people are cognizant of that,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely.
And I think that ultimately, well, most that I interviewed found that they were saying, hey, I just want to make it home to my family.
Exactly.
I was scared. I was, it was acting out of fear. And again, I saw a pattern. You know, it's one thing if there's two people, but it's like, okay, if a third of my list are black men that are fleeing, that's a pattern. I think we need to pay closer attention to that.
That is
what are
serious.
The factors behind that? Why is it happening? I mean, I talked to one guy, he was a college student, never been charged of anything. He was like, I was scared and I was just trying to make it home so somebody could see me. And so I think that's a problem. I mean, NAACP has tried to address. I know they sued. And anytime you have a police chase, people immediately, we talk about the damage. We talk about what police were chasing for. But I think we need to pay attention to who is centered, you know, in those stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've written about it over the years just so that the general public, particularly parents and grandparents, know what their male child is facing when they leave the house. And because you often hear this thing, well, why did they run? Why did they just... Okay, you don't seem to understand the life of a black man on the streets of St. Louis, because when you've been threatened and you've seen peers killed with no retribution, that's enough to change your behavior in terms of how you're going to interact with police.
One of my sources in there, David Hemphill, had actually told me that he had his arm broken by a police officer and actually had sued previously and had a settlement. So again, also the policeman that was chasing him in his situation was his neighbor. So I don't, you know, all those different factors into it. Again, I try to humanize people. You know, we always hear about these incidents and people use police jargon, but I went in their living rooms. I talked to them. I ate with them. I, you know, hey, explain to me, why did you do this with Kyla? It was controversial for me to open up the story. I mean, she's waving a gun in the air. I didn't hide it, though. Mm-hmm. I wanted to show that these are the people that are out that live with us. Again, we need to talk about intervention.
Mm-hmm.
Again, they're out. None of them got jail time. And even if they did, they're coming out. These aren't life sentences. So
right.
I think oftentimes when it comes to criminal justice coverage and people say, oh, you're glorifying criminals, you know, people that live in our community. You know, we cannot ignore that.
And I think one of the things that your article did real good at is, like, here are the conditions in which people are living. Some of this, we can have some intervention so that they don't have to make a decision like this. And instead, we still are on the criminal punitive path as opposed to what can we do to eliminate, in Kyla's situation, what could we have done differently? What would you suggest would have been done differently to help that sister out?
I could say what wasn't done, and again, it was not highlighted. I would say this. One thing I did is I went and got all of her violations. When she got sent to jail, I wanted to look at them. I wanted to see what the judge saw exactly. So with her permission, I got copies of all her violations. By the way, I had some privacy concerns because before I even got this to the Times, I saw that when people violate it, it shows your violation, which shows a map of where you are.
Mm-hmm.
So again, these are people, again, charged with lower level felonies that now have their location revealed
mm-hmm.
to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have a special login or anything. But anyways, with Kyla, I went and saw all of her violations, right? And I saw where she was. And I actually asked about every single one. And I took note. I mean, I couldn't put all this in an article. It's a long article. But I got her note on every single one. None of the violations were in direct violation of the judge's order, which was to stay away from the so-called victim's house. She never was in that area and never even showed her going past the house. But yet the victim, the person in her situation, was calling and saying, oh, she's coming by my house. But the monitor never showed her there. It would have. All her violations, she told me, oh, yeah, I was at Walgreens that day. I was at Dollar Tree that day. I was getting groceries that day. I mean, I had a list of all her violations. And I will say this, not all of them were for that. One time she was like, look, I was getting my hair done and it got late. And she got a violation. But again, with her, the judge, to my knowledge, never even reviewed the violations. Otherwise, you would have saw possibly that none of the violations, she didn't go to the victim's house like she was claiming. So, I mean, he has sent her back to jail because he said, well, I don't know. It's a he say, she say situation.
But it really wasn't.
I would say you have the technology to see otherwise.
And isn't that the whole point of wearing the monitor so that you can
see her location?
But this is what I'm saying. You know, Taylor, what's the point of having this stuff if you always default back to, it's a black person, I'm locking them up? What is the point of having... If you went through, if you took the time to go through all of those violations and saw that they were not even in the vicinity, they had all to do with her daily routine, then at some point as the judge, you say, okay, what you need to work on is being more vigilant about contacting us when there's a problem. Because to me, that's...
And sometimes people did. I will say this. Get some stats about the company, Total Court Services. They're a Michigan-based company right across the street from the courthouse. They have about 4 to 5 people total that watch. You realize there's about maybe any given month, depending on who gets arrested and charged, there's about 300 to 400 people.
I saw that.
So that's about, you know, 4 people watching 300 to 400 people.
All day, 24/7.
And they're not always watching them. It's when they get a violation. They're not watching that. It's kind of like automatic, and they're just kind of adding it to the docket. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, you only have that. So, also, we have a small amount of people supervising. A number of people, also, they got sent back for being unhoused. So, you know, if they're in violation, they're not able to go to that homeless shelter because they must stay away from there, or they can't keep a charge because they're unhoused. And, you know, where are they supposed to plug it in at?
Mm-hmm.
There were a number of people that were assigned to places. It's like, oh, that's an abandoned building. There was a mother who was there. She was a so-called victim or survivor in the situation. She's like, GPS isn't helping me as the victim, because she's like, my son got assigned to a house that's an abandoned building. He can't charge there. He's homeless. He has nowhere to go. He's still bothering me. I still want to help him, but as we can see, it wasn't helping. So, again, it wasn't just Kyla's situation. James, he lived in an apartment. I highlighted with him. One of the experts on GPS told me that, hey, apartment buildings can sometimes get in the way of accuracy with reporting. James told me, and it showed that it would show him outside the building because he was in an apartment. So even though he was in this specific square, it might show him mm-hmm. 2 squares over. Mm-hmm. So that's a violation. He's like... Do I look like I walk around my apartment building at night? Like, that's dumb.
Right, right.
But he's getting violations for
wow.
that. Also, the humanity. With James, I wanted to highlight, there was a death in the family. And he went over to his mother's house, and I think he called late. And they noted that on the docket. It said, you know, had a death in the family. I reminded him, next time if that happens, you need to do X, Y, or Z. So I wanted to highlight, you know, this is what people experience. This is how they're juggling their daily lives with the monitor. And again, people are saying, hey, it's better than jail. But I will say this, experts on GPS that I talked to, national experts, said that, hey, there are certain factors you need in order to be successful on this monitor. You need to still be able to keep a job.
Mm.
You need to be able to have steady housing. You need to be able to still have social activity with your family and your community. These are all the things that you need to be successful, but yet... Sometimes when I sat in those court hearings, when someone would ask, hey, can I go to my kid's football game? You know, the judge would laugh, or they were appalled, or like
are you kidding
yeah,
me?
Yeah, why would I let you?
Are you kidding me?
Do you want to be in jail? You know, hey, you should be glad that you're just out of jail.
Mm.
But again, the experts, these are former probation officers, people who own monitoring companies, are telling me these are the factors that are needed. So
it's interesting, you already have said that most of the folks that in the system here in St. Louis are predominantly black and predominantly male. Were you able to look at any white people who were on the ankle monitor to see if there was any real differences between the way that it played out in their lives?
I wasn't able to see a difference. I mean, I believed I talked to 2 white males who were on a monitor. I'm trying to think. One of them, I remember, got a charge while he was here, but he lived like 2 hours away and was given permission to go out of state for work. I think he was like a contractor or something like that. So I remember that. I remember there was another...
So he left state with a monitor on.
Yes, that was got approved. Permission from the judge. And again, not to say that may not happen with some others, even black males, but again, it depends on the judge. That is, again, where we have a lack of oversight. We don't have the data. We would have to literally go in each courtroom, like what FCC does with court watch, and see what the judge's decisions are, not with even just putting on the monitor what happens and how they rule on each violation. I don't even know if we'll be able to do that. But they usually keep it on for about 90 days is the average amount of time before filing a motion to get it off. But people are asking their lawyer every turn, like, hey, can you ask? Mm. Because it's getting in the way of their life.
Right.
But there were people who have been on that monitor, I would say, for like 2 years.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So in the few minutes that we have left, I do want to talk about the contract and how that totality was selected over others, and then what the cost of that contract is and that kind of thing. And then, like, what impact did your article have on judges? Can we assess that to see if, like, oh, okay? Because I know sometimes when you are got your head buried in a particular profession and all of the stuff that you uncover, you may not have the ability to talk to all of the folks who, or even a sampling of the folks who are on ankle monitors. But I'm just wondering, how could an investigative piece like this that was well documented, I mean, you just a bulldog when it comes to getting your sources. And,
I try to be.
Like, what can we say is going to be the impact of this article on the justice system, particularly as it relates to the ankle monitors?
Right. Well, impact, I want to continue to come in and talk about the impact. I think we're going to continue until we change the policy, until we see. So right now, when we say budget, the judges approved ankle monitoring without any questioning. We saw when Sheriff Montgomery went before the Board of Aldermen and asked for additional funding for jail matters and things like that. But the judges didn't have to do that for ankle monitors. There was no oversight. The aldermen, everyone, it was all approved without, being questioned about it. So again, until we get additional oversight, we'll continue to have incidents again. Hopefully not, but like the Daniel Riley incident, where it's like, okay, someone's out on ankle monitor, how are the judges going to react? Are there any type of rules or regulations with it? Because right now there is not.
That's interesting, because I'm thinking then, okay, if the judges have the power to do that, and again, I just want to flag y'all, that's how powerful these judges are. That's why it's important when we get ready to re-elect them that we know what we're doing. But I'm thinking that what kind of reports is totality given to the judges to inform them that may help or harm the way that they're looking at future assessments, future ways of giving people the sentence or the whatever they need to do for that one particular person based on whatever they were charged for.
So right now, I will say pre-child services, they will give a report sometime over the course of 3 months of this is how well this person has fared while on ankle monitoring. At times, I've read even in the docket how some people have wrote the judge about, you know, hey, these are the problems that I've experienced. This is what happened with the ankle monitor. So I would say this, Total Court Services even called themselves reform-minded. Everybody's reform-minded now, right? Mm-hmm. And they even blamed the pointed the finger on employers for people not being able to hold jobs and things like that. So, again, I think that right now what I've heard is there's talk of just trying to get a group or committee, kind of like with oversight of the jail, mm-hmm. having oversight or adding that oversight of people on monitors. But I don't know. I've covered the DFOB. I remember the resignations. I remember Janice being hauled off to jail, so mm-hmm. I don't know how effective oversight ultimately will be. But again, we'll continue to see these stories happen because crimes continue to have crime, mm-hmm. continue mm-hmm. to let people out and see, okay, are we going to put them on monitor? Are we not? Like I said, I did see a downward shift since December on monitors, but again, we've seen those jail numbers go up.
Mm-hmm. So people are complaining to the judges about what's going on with the monitors. How is that being transferred to Total so that they can start really accumulating the data and come out with a better informed report about how these braces are working, and for them to also make the adjustments on their side?
Right. Well, I know that the bidding, I think, is either coming up this year or later. I think it was supposed to be put up in the spring. So competitive bidding. Right now, I know there are a bunch of smaller companies that are putting a bid. By the way, companies now that are GPS monitors, the system just shifts, right? It was a reform, but it just shifts. And I say that because former bondsmen are now GPS monitor company owners.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
look at that.
So we see that it's
yeah,
a
look how we pivoted so we can continue making the money off of black bodies.
But I actually talked to one of the former bondsmen who now owns a company, and they, you know, they were like, yeah, you know, we couldn't compete. Total Court Services was a bigger company. It's out of state. But I would say this, people have to continue to, I would say, bring it up, make noise, bring those concerns to legislators, bring those concerns to the media. I think we'll continue to see incidents. As long as people are on the monitors, it's in their lives, they're out on bond, we'll continue to see stories, and it's just about how do we react to that.
Right. And so if you have not read this article, I'm going to plead with you to do so, and not just for organizations who are about reform of the court system, but general public, because you all need to know what's happening again with your tax dollars. And the fact that, Taylor, you kept mentioning that these people are going to be out, they're going to be amongst us. So
they're your neighbors. They're our
family members.
Consider the amount of people that have possibly been arrested in St. Louis before and had to post a bond. This is you. This is what you could have been subject to. This is what you may possibly be subject to in the future.
And so when we get ready to talk about what kind of society are we trying to create in spite of folks committing alleged crimes, and what part of restorative justice is a part of the court process, those are the things I really want us to focus on. I think the name of the article is Amid Calls to Reform Bail, St. Louis Judges Embrace Ankle Monitors. But I will just, what I do when I need to see it again, I just put in Taylor Harris, ankle monitors, and all her articles come
Taylor
up.
Taylor Tiamoyo Harris. I know people always, Tiamoyo.
Tiamoyo. She's been out there for that article, and I'm hoping, I would really like to have, to see what the lives are, the people who were highlighted in the article. Did they get any bad publicity? But because you said we don't care, we want
to. Yeah, not that they didn't care, but even some of them said they wanted to. I mean, I didn't just, you know, I wouldn't put a microphone in their face as soon as I saw them. Mm-hmm. These are people I've talked to for months on end, and I kept reminding them, hey, this will be in the New York Times. This will be posted internationally.
Yeah.
You know, and they were wanting to share their stories. So they wanted their message to get out there, and I think it really resonated with people.
Yeah.
Again, like you said, hopefully even outside the criminal justice community.
Yeah.
I also add that this is not just St. Louis. This is everywhere. Everybody has ankle monitors now.
Mm-hmm.
In pretrial, San Francisco, Los Angeles, New Mexico, Seattle, Oregon, Chicago, the whole state of Illinois, Dallas, Houston, New Orleans, Miami, Alabama, D.C., Maryland recently enacted a law about juvenile GPS monitors. It's in New York, New Jersey. It's literally everywhere. So this is just, you know, the new face of pretrial.
And that's why we have to not wait till we get all of these ugly stories before we start saying, oh, there needs to be something. Let's try to be proactive, because I think what you've uncovered is some of the issues that are going to be chronic issues, even though we may not be aware of them because people are ashamed of the ankle braces. But these folks were forthcoming, and I'm glad they were, because you wouldn't really have had a powerful story without their stories.
Of course, that was key. That was the first thing I was focused on getting. But that's been my superpower in St. Louis, is just connecting with people and connecting with the community and telling them who I am, what I'm about, and also protecting their story.
Yeah, and I think you know what I know, and I'm not an investigative reporter, and I keep telling people.
Are you? You might be.
You better be glad I'm not. Because some of y'all,
I don't know.
Been totally exposed. So I'm a storyteller, and sometimes I get the information, and I'm definitely key on data and trends and what we need to be focused on so that we can be proactive instead of reactive. But there's a lot going on with the court system, and because the fool in the White House is really trying to make this a police state, that means that any one of us could be a victim of the criminal justice system.
Transparency. You mentioned before, you read off Mike's statement from FCC. everything that they read off, those came from those policies are public. So we don't have to no longer, I mean, with media, just say like, you know, family want answers. We can say specifically what there was supposed to be someone, two guards, and it was supposed to be recorded, and someone's supposed to check on you every 30 minutes to an hour. How do we know that? Because it's public. It's transparent.
Yeah.
We have those policies posted online.
And some of these meetings are also online and in Zoom, and you could look at that. So really, we're getting to a point now that we can't say we didn't know or that we weren't informed, because what we can't see, we can ask for, and they were required to share it with us. So this has been a fast-moving discussion, and I still had some questions that I'm going to have to figure out how to get you back. And I'm wondering if we can get some of the folks who you interviewed. We don't want them to miss work just to be on the radio show. But, yeah, it'd be good to actually hear from them as well about what life is like post, you know, the monitors being taken off, and what advice that they would have to a court, to the public. Those are the continuing stories, because like you said, it doesn't just end with the publishing of this article. It's an ongoing, you know, the saga of how do we reform a court system that is hell-bent on punishment and punishment of black and brown people. So I have a few announcements, because folks know that next week is the first of the month movie time, and that is a fundraiser for the Black Radio Hall of Fame, but at 24-1 Cinema, 6755 Page. You're going to get a deal at 10 o'clock in the morning. I know most people don't want to watch a movie there, but you can be there with your friends at 10 a.m. and you get free hot dog, free popcorn, all for $7.10, If Not For His Grace. That's the movie that will be coming up next week at the cinema. And tomorrow, that's the 31st. There's going to be a community meeting with some of the black elected officials about the tornado. And so we still, that is a saga, an ongoing saga that we definitely need to be tuned into. The Black Breathwork, the Breathwork series is going on. There's new dates for August. All of these are going to be on my website, JamalaRogers.com. So if you missed a previous show or you didn't get all of the events, just go there and you will see them. But check out Taylor Tiamoya's Harris piece, y'all, and it's not only enlightening, it is inspiring, because it made me want to see what more can I do around court reform, and you know, how can we hook up with Freedom Community Center to see what they're doing. And the good news, y'all, is that they dropped the charges against Janice Mensa, who was the DFOB member who was assaulted by the guards. We put enough pressure
at the jail,
on camera, and we pretty much convinced them that, you know, y'all wasting our time, energy, and tax dollars with this case, because it's going nowhere. So this is Jamala Rogers. I will see you on the battlefield. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.